Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. As law enforcement agencies throughout the nation continue to face challenges brought about by the current economic changes, it is increasingly important that these agencies find innovative ways to ensure the safety of the public. We are facing a new reality in American policing, one that requires a shift in the methods used to ensure public safety while also dealing with ever-shrinking budgets. In that vein, many in the law enforcement community recognize the importance of maintaining and expanding community policing practices. In the end, it's all about building partnerships and solving community problems. What is community policing, and how does it contribute to the safety of neighborhoods and communities? What is the mission of the Office of Community-Oriented Policing Services? How has the era of fiscal austerity changed the way law enforcement operates? And how can technology enhance community policing? We will explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Bernard Malekian, Director of the Office of Community-Oriented Policing Services within the U.S. Department of Justice. Welcome, Bernard. It's great to have you on the show.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Melinda Balthrop. Melinda, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Bernard, I'd like to start off by providing some context. Would you provide us with a brief history and overview of the mission of the Office of Community-Oriented Policing Services, or COPS? When was it created, and how has its mission evolved to date?
My pleasure to do so. You know, the office started back in the mid-90s, really to advance community policing throughout the United States. Community policing was a philosophy that had been articulated but really intermittently implemented across the country. It coincided with a push by the administration of President Clinton to put 100,000 police officers on the streets of America. And hopefully for those officers to advance community policing. The good news was, of course, that that objective was achieved. But the challenge that it presented was that it politicized the office to some degree. The question really became, is the mission of the COPS office to advance community policing, to advance public safety through community policing, or was it a jobs program? What we've tried to do over the intervening years and the funding levels and the programs that we fund have risen and fallen. But what we've tried to do over the last few years is to make it very clear that our mission is to help local law enforcement make the communities that they serve safer. And we do that through a variety of means.
And I'd like to touch on that. And I get a sense of the scale of operation of your office. How is it organized? What's the size of its budget? And more particularly, what's the size of its grants portfolio?
You know, the size of the grants portfolio varies from year to year, and it varies depending on how many programs we have. This year, for example, we had roughly $111 million in hiring grants. That's down almost 90% from 3 years ago when we had $1 billion as part of the Recovery Act. And the focus of those hiring grants is to enable local law enforcement agencies to hire additional officers to address specific community problems. This year, we also had roughly $12 million for community policing development projects. And we fund various research efforts designed to produce reports, produce data that hopefully law enforcement agencies across the country can look at, and if they've got a specific problem, and say, you know what, we could use that and learn from it.
Bernard, I'd like to transition to your role leading the COPS office. Can you talk about your specific responsibilities and duties as the director and how you support the overall mission of the Department of Justice?
I think without question, the role of the director is, if I was designing a coat of arms, I think I would do two things. I would have a compass to say we're going to go this way. When I talk about advancing public safety through community policing, I believe that's a mission statement. But I also believe that I need to provide an umbrella. One of the things I have been absolutely struck by is the dedication of the men and women of the office and their commitment to this mission. Part of my job, I think, is to help them do that and to help deal with the realities of Washington and the political environment we're in, and let them do their work. I also get to interact with the field a great deal. It's my favorite part of my job. I've visited 32 states and 2 foreign countries, and in the 3 years that I've been in this job, I have talked to law enforcement leaders, chiefs and sheriffs, as well as line personnel around this country, and really gotten a feel for the challenges that they're facing, particularly in this economy. So it's very exciting. It's a very exciting job to have.
So, Bernard, I'd like to sort of focus internally a little bit and possibly externally and look at the top management challenges you face. What are some of the top management challenges you face, and how have you sought to address them?
Well, without question, certainly the issue of hiring and budgets and economies. I mean, every federal agency is under hiring freeze. Every federal agency, the federal workforce has been, I think, 2 years now, coming on 3, without a pay increase. Those are sort of internal morale issues. And the economy has really played havoc with local law enforcement agencies and the expectations of the office. I think the first year that I was there, it was a fairly continual stream of local officials, chiefs, sheriffs, mayors, saying our budget is being wiped out, can you help us? And trying to explain that that's not the role of the office, that we want to focus on helping them solve specific problems. But all of that presents a challenge in an environment where as people leave, they're not replaced, and we have to figure out different ways to do business. Those have presented challenges, but they've also presented some pretty unique opportunities in terms of realigning, looking at workflow, looking at, we've done things a certain way for quite some time, and now we have to look at doing it differently, which is the same thing we're telling the law enforcement field. You have to do it differently. So it's been, it certainly has not been a boring 3 years.
Perhaps you can give us a little bit of your background, actually. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
I've been a police officer. I was a police officer for 36 years. I started out at the Santa Monica, California Police Department. I spent a year with the Santa Barbara County Sheriffs, and then I came back to Santa Monica. And in 1996, I had the privilege of being selected as the police chief in Pasadena. My career was very operational. I was the first dog handler in Los Angeles County back in the 70s. It's hard to even say that. And I spent a lot of time on tactical operations teams and those kind of things. At the same time, and I think one of the things that might be interesting to people, I don't know, is a great deal of my life as I was working and raising a family and doing those things was spent going to school. It took me 10 years to get a bachelor's degree. It took me 6 years to get a master's degree. It took me 8 years to get a doctorate. So everything I was doing at the same time, I was interacting with people sort of outside of the law enforcement realm, and that is not as insignificant as it might seem. Certainly changed my perspective. I also served in the Coast Guard Reserve for 25 years, and that included two active duty deployments. I was the only one of 3 police chiefs in the country in 2003 to be on active duty. I retired from both the police department and the Coast Guard in 2009 when I came here. I'm very glad to have gotten to do all of that.
So with that background and that vast experience, both with the Coast Guard and as a police chief, what makes an effective leader?
I think there are several things. I think you have to have clarity of vision, clarity of focus, what it is you want to do and where you want to go. Secondly, you have to have faith in the people who work for you. You have to have faith that you have trained them and developed them and brought them along in a way that's meaningful. I often used to tell young cops, I think sometimes thinking maybe they're going to score points or something, would say, well, tell us, what we should do about this or that, some tactical operational thing. And I would say I try to never confuse what I know with what I knew. I think that's not an unimportant aspect, because these young people that are doing this work, whether it's in police work or in the federal government, are really incredibly dedicated and smart. And that's what I meant about a compass. I also think you have to have integrity and transparency. You absolutely have to do what you say you're going to do, not just on the big things, but on the day-to-day things. I actually, when I go to meetings, especially if it's with employee groups or stakeholder groups, I always make sure someone's with me to write down what it is I say I'm going to do, because it's very easy in a conversation, and it's not malicious, but it's very easy to say I'm going to do this, and then you forget it. And then what you don't think about it because you forgot it, but the person says, oh, well, that person told me that they were going to do this and they didn't, and they formed an opinion. So I think integrity, and I think also transparency. How do you make the decisions? Why do you make the decisions? One of the most valuable leadership lessons that I got came from being on active duty in the Coast Guard and in my subsequent years of drilling, because I was not I was a search and rescue boat driver, a harbor security boat driver. I retired as an E-7. I was a first line supervisor in the Coast Guard. That's what I wanted to do. The point of that is that I would leave the police department where I was the chief of police. And go down and be a first-line supervisor in a completely different organization, sometimes on the same day. And it was very interesting. People used to ask me, well, what was the hardest part of being on active duty? Or what was the best part of being on active duty? I said, well, you know, I wasn't in charge of everything. I just did what they told me to do. And he said, well, what was the worst part? And I said, well, I wasn't in charge of everything, and I had to do what they told me to do. So I think those things, and I think caring or compassion, if that's a word, the right word for the people who actually do the work.
What is community policing? We will ask Bernard Malekian, Director of the Office of Community-Oriented Policing Services within DOJ, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.